This is a special meeting of the Civil Service Commission. Today is Tuesday, January 10th, 2012. It is 4:07 p.m. and we're in the council chamber. So I'm Kate Brown, the Secretary Chief Examiner Pro Tem, and I want to thank you all on behalf of the city for volunteering for this commission and being here today. We have an agenda in front of us for this special meeting, and we will just go ahead and get started. The first item, obviously, call to order. Next, new commissioner self-introductions. So maybe you'd like to go around, each of you, a few minutes and introduce yourselves to each other.
All right, well, let's just go this way. I'm William Foster. I've been living on the island for 13 years. I have a wife and two children. The two children have gone through the public schools here, Blakely, and through high school. My daughter is a senior at Bainbridge High School right now, and my son is a sophomore at UW. I work at the Seattle City Attorney's Office, and I've been working there as an environmental attorney for the last 8 years. I serve clients, mostly utility clients, but other clients of the city and the city council as well. So I'm kind of familiar with municipal law generally and the functionings of a city, although I'll say and confess that I don't have much experience when it comes to civil service commission, police work. But I'm excited to be here and to learn and to participate and help.
Hi, I'm Robert Killian. I've lived on the island about a year and a half. My background is in law enforcement. I was a patrol officer down in Austin, Texas, many moons ago. Left that when my wife got a grad school fellowship back east. We moved back to Boston for a couple years, but then came back to Austin, Texas, and I went back to work in a civilian capacity, but doing intelligence analysis work for the state police and our narcotics bureau, and then some white-collar crime work as an investigator for our fraud department as well. Moved to the island here, or really over to Seattle first, then I got to the island about a year and a half ago. I've got a 4 and a 6-year-old, love the island. They're both at Ordway, and looking forward to having them grow up here on the island. Some of my more recent activities have been serving this last year on the ethics board. We were the party that reviewed the recent finding that involved the Civil Service Commission, and I had done some work with the Civil Service Commission about a year or so ago, volunteering at a couple meetings and then sitting on one of their interview panels for the new hire police officers. And maybe that's one of them now, I'm not sure. So looking forward to the work ahead, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity for us all. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Lakich. I've been on the island off and on for 16 years when I was appointed by Seattle Mayor Norm Rice as Director of Labor Relations for the City of Seattle in 1995. We bought a home here on the island and lived here for 3 years, and Norm didn't run for re-election, ran for governor, didn't get elected, and I was not appointed by the new mayor, and Sacramento County asked me to come back, and I came back for a consultant for the next 9 years, and my background is basically in labor relations. In fact, all of it is. I've taught labor relations at UC Davis for 30 years. I was a union rep back in the old days with the Steelworkers Union for about 10 years. I used to tell my students that my career in labor relations started when my mother was in labor, and it's never stopped. But I'm currently a consultant in labor relations. I'm the trustee for the California Highway Patrol Health and Welfare Trust. I've done some training with some of the labor unions. We're living basically most of the time here in Bainbridge. We still have a home in Sacramento. We have four kids, six grandkids. We have half the family living here. Most of the other half live in Sacramento. I have a daughter living in Washington, D.C. So we try to divide our time. But my wife just retired as a special ed school teacher, and we're now living more on the island here. And, we probably spend at least 7 months a year here. So, and I've become a voter in case the kids have come. So I'm looking forward to working with the board members.
I'm Linda McMahon and have been active in the community for a long time. We moved here in 88. I don't have anything specific in my background to prepare me for this other than love of community. And I look forward to serve.
And my name is Bruce Weiland, and my wife and I have lived here for 22 years, raised all three kids through the Bainbridge schools, and I'm a real estate attorney. My office is here in Winslow. I've been a solo practitioner for the last 20 plus years. I'm not particularly qualified in terms of civil service and police work. And I'm glad to hear we have some expertise in both labor relations and police activities. But I have been on several boards. I was on the school board for 12 years, and I was president of the school board for a number of those years. So I've got some experience in dealing with Open Meetings Act and operating a board and those kind of things. So I'm happy to help out. This should be interesting, and I look forward to it.
Okay, great. So that brings us to the disclosure of conflicts of interest. And I was going to ask Commissioner Killian to talk a little bit about this in terms of how the Ethics Board does that at their meetings. Would that be okay? Thanks.
On the Ethics Board, this is actually a requirement of any commission or committee that the city has to have a standing agenda item to reveal any conflicts of interest of anything that it pertains to the specific agenda or in general. It could be as innocuous as I ran into Councilman so-and-so at the grocery store and we talked about something, or it could be something that police officer applicant slipped me the keys to a new car or something like that. So it covers a wide range of things, but it's just an opportunity for every commissioner to kind of reveal that they do or they don't have any particular conflicts of interest, and it can be a position that it may be a gray area, and so long as you are open and honest and transparent about that, we can discuss it as a body, and so both the public and we all know that there was a contact with somebody in the course of intermeeting periods, and then we can discuss it as a body on whether or not we need to someone needs to recuse themselves from a particular vote or a particular issue that comes up before us. So that's kind of what it pertains to. I can kick it off that I don't have any conflicts of interest to disclose at this time.
I don't have any either. I'm assuming that the fact that we have to pick a chair and a vice chair, I have an interest in that, but I don't think that would qualify as a conflict. I'm kidding a little bit.
Yeah.
I have no conflict of interest at this time. Okay. If I do, I'll let everybody else know.
I don't have any conflict of interest. I do want to share that I have been a member of the board for Sportsman's Club for a long time and president of the board there, and that has a relationship with the police department, and Chief Feldman and I have been on that board and served together.
I don't believe I have any conflicts, but I'll surely bring it up if they arise. So.
Okay, great. So the next item on the agenda is the selection of chair and vice chair. Are there any volunteers or any nominations?
Well, I was going to simply say that, like I say, I've done chair before. I am happy if someone else wants it, but if you want if you're looking for someone to do it, I'm happy to do it. So I throw my hat in the ring with that caveat that I'm delighted if someone else takes it, but I have run lots of meetings before in my life, so.
I support Bruce as chair because he has run lots of meetings and public meetings, and I think would do an excellent job. And just to let everybody know, I'm pretty much of a stickler for getting out of meetings on time, and so I'll play that role no matter what my position is. Thank you.
I'll second the nomination of Bruce.
Okay.
That sounds great to me as well, as someone that is organized and sat in that position as well. I would be happy to sit in at as a vice chair candidate, happy to sit in that role. And something that we had done on the ethics board to discuss is a kind of a pro tem or rotating type chairmanship, either on an annual basis or something as it comes back up, so we can share that role and pass it on, and then everybody gets an opportunity as well.
So can I make a motion that for Bruce to serve as chair and for Rob to serve as vice chair?
As long as you didn't want to step in, because I truly meant that. So,
and I truly mean my motion.
I'll second the motion.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
I guess I will. All those in favor of the motion to appoint Bruce Weiland as the chair and Rob Killian as the vice chair?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. So I will hand over this meeting to you, Commissioner Weiland.
Okay. Let me make one other, let me make a couple of comments and one other suggestion. I love the idea of rotating. I would like maybe even suggest that in 6 months we revisit it, and you know, it's something that we could just take and choose to do what we want. And I don't propose to make that a motion, just would offer that up for everyone's consideration. Let me just say one thing about my past experience as being a chair on boards. I tend to be a fairly informal guy, and I mean, I understand that Robert's Rules of Order are kind of the basis for doing things, but my goal in any board I've sat on in the past has always been to reach consensus. And often the best way to get to consensus is to let people talk freely and try to moderate so everybody has a chance to say what they mean. But I hope no one here is uncomfortable with the notion of keeping it loose. Okay. The other thing I would say is, it's on a personal note, I have very limited vision. So in other words, I can only look in a very small area at a time, which means that if you have your hand raised or somehow trying to get my attention and I don't see you, it's not because I'm being rude, because I really don't see you. So I appreciate it. You know, Linda, if you see something, just tap me on the shoulder. So just a personal note there. Okay. Other than that, I am relying on Kate, I guess, to tell us what all these agenda items
sure.
are about.
No problem.
Because I don't know what we've got here. But
no problem.
Next on the agenda, we have the police department overview.
So Chief Fellman is going to do an overview for, or present an overview for you of the department. And I'll just let you know, this was a presentation he made to the incoming council members at an orientation session we held a couple weeks ago. If you turn on your monitors in front of you, it should come up. That's the general idea.
Everybody have it? Well, good afternoon. I'm Chief John Fellman. I've met most of you beforehand or as you came in the door, and look forward to working with you for the next several years, hopefully. As you can see on your monitors, this is the org chart of the police department. Attached to my office is the senior executive secretary, and then under that is the evidence technician and two senior police clerks. Directly below me is the commander, and that's Commander Sue Schultz, who is here with us today also. The areas of responsibility is that she runs what is called operations. So the field work you see, the patrol officers, the parking enforcement officers, she's got the bulk of all those type of operations, and I take care of the administration. We have 21 total sworn commissioned officers. Then the other staff are civilian staff. With the parking enforcement are civilian, the senior executive secretary, records evidence, and the harbor master. Up there also, as you look, when you see the 75, that's obviously a three-quarter time position that the harbor master fills.
What my point was that? Just a quick question. Is the harbor master a sworn officer?
No,
well?
It's no. Also civilian.
Civilian. Thank you.
I don't get it. Sorry. I can do it right here. Okay, administration-wise, setting department policies, oversee of all department functions, develop and monitor the budget, coordinate emergency management. A note on that is you saw that this past year, we moved a lot of the emergency preparedness over to the fire department as part of their contract with the city. Still as first responders, we're still responsible for a large piece of that, meaning our officers are the first on scene of most emergencies and that we still take on a big role there. Part of my responsibility is also responding to public disclosure requests. The senior executive secretary with the police department is the person that does all those for the police department, but again, briefs me or keeps me in the loop on that. Management of evidence, we have our own evidence room. We have an outstanding evidence technician that works for us, and that's also part of my responsibility. This is our budget. You can see the blue area is the personnel costs. That is our biggest chunk. Everything else above that, labeled other, equipment, supplies, fuel, you name it, that's what falls under the red area. This is the commander, the area that she's responsible for. You see patrol, obviously the police cars out on the street, investigations. We have two detectives assigned to investigations. Our marine unit, we have a patrol boat, a safe boat that you'll see our officers out on. Parking enforcement, that's island-wide. And then community involvement, any of the community meetings, any of the work groups that we're part of. She's part of that, I'm part of that also. Things like the Just Know Coalition, parent-teacher groups throughout, any community groups that we're asked to be part of. Some of the things patrol does, obviously not an exhaustive list, but we respond to anywhere between 14,000 and 17,000 calls for service a year. And those are some of the things that our patrol officers do a great deal of. Grant management, we have a grant that takes care of our patrol boat, but we also at times are work to get grants to take care of some of our patrol functions also, especially equipment. Investigations. With two of them, they're generalists, they're not specialists. Like one of them's not a homicide detective. They're generalists, they take care of all follow-up on all crimes. They're also part of numerous county and statewide task force and even a couple of the Fed task force. Our Marine group, this is the areas where they take care of. Part of the RCW for Marine patrols is that we're responsible for the water halfway between us and the next landmass. So between us and Seattle, halfway, that belongs to us. And we're the boat on the water in this area. The Kitsap County Sheriff's has a boat, Port Orchard has a boat, but obviously they're in other areas. We take all the ferry traffic. We are the boat that has done the most training, both with the FBI and the Washington State Patrol. We're the only boat that has boarded the ferry while underway. So we have that capability. The FBI and the State Patrol, we are the boat of choice that they have trained on, and so our operators are very good at that. We do a lot of work with Homeland Security. Anything that comes up, we have regular meetings with the groups over in Seattle. Parking enforcement, again, anyone's trying to find parking around here, we need parking enforcement. We have two very good parking enforcement officers. They do a good job. Community involvement, just a few of the things we do is Citizens Academy. We'll have a new one starting up in the spring. School events and outreach, special event permits, neighborhood watch, and vacation house checks. This is just pull off a website, just the crime stats in Bainbridge, the adult arrests, the juvenile arrests. You can see those in the bottom right of your screen there. Property crimes is obviously our biggest area. Thankfully, we have a very low violent crime rate, but we have a kind of a disproportionately high crime rate when it comes to property crimes. And this is adult arrests and juvenile arrests kind of broken out by the different categories. As we go through the year, one of the things you'll hear about will be Part 1 crimes. Part 1 crimes are really, when you look, if you could look up at those, probably, I don't have my glasses on right now, but the ones, the murder, the manslaughter, rape, robbery, aggravated assault, those are the ones that are considered the higher priority crimes. And then the other crimes underneath are just broken out for you. Work plan items, this is something that all departments in the city have been assigned as different work plan items for this year. 2012, our one of our big ones is undertaking a community-wide survey. What we're looking on, or working on, is getting input from the community. And we're going to do this through a survey tool to either phone, mailers, some along those lines, where we're getting feedback from the community. We've also changed our website. Where you look where it says an area where it's complaint commendations. We have a more of a free text area where folks can write in any comments they want, give us feedback on anything. We've had that up for about 4 weeks now, Kate, and Kate helped put that together. And interestingly, about 7-8 different things come through there, a couple parking complaints too. So implement policy recommendations from Palka Consulting and Lexipol. Palka, Sam Palka did a report on our internal affairs process and our the inner workings of how we investigate ourselves. And she has some recommendations out of that report. That report's available for any of you. I'll make a copy, give it to any of you. And it just gives us some areas that we need to work on. It also pointed out some strengths, but there's areas we need to improve on. Focus on professional development. This is all staff. We're working on developing a citywide training plan, but also in the police department, we're developing a department-wide training plan so that whenever you have a position, you can look at that position and say, if I'm an evidence technician, I have to go through XYZ training. And we break it out as mandatory, essential, and desirable. And that way we know the mandatory training, that's stuff we got to get our guys to right away. The essential is a second category down, meaning good stuff, but you know, it's not going to bump up. We're going to get rid of the, or complete the mandatory stuff first before we ever get down to essential. Desirable, those things that if we had the time and money, yeah, we'd like to send everybody to. And the CINCOM addressing project, big project. You've been around the island for a while. Sometimes our addresses are not quite what they should be. Somehow you jump from the 8,000 block, you know, within a block. You've missed the whole 7,000 block. CINCOM is our central communications in Bremerton that does all dispatching for the county. What they're working on with us is we need to have a better addressing system for emergency response so that when you make the call, the correct address comes up, the correct 1,000 block for the officer or the firefighters responding come up. We have real issues with that. We have a lot of long, long driveways, 10, 12 addresses on a long driveway. A better way of making that sequential so that if we're going down that driveway, we can find which house we need to respond to. Questions from you?
Thanks, Chief. Great presentation there. Just a quick question, and maybe hypothetical at this point. There was discussion about a school resource officer grant, and I saw you mention that in your presentation. What's the current status of that school resource officer grant from the feds?
That was a data grant from last year. It's gone. Other grant opportunities come up, and what we do is we will go before council with those grant opportunities, but that one was one we had applied for last year.
Okay, and just from our capacity, if those grant opportunities for additional officers are brought up, is there any hiring differences in grant-funded officers, or do they go through the exact same testing and evaluation process as any other new hire regular funded officer?
Right. The process is exactly the same for the hiring. It would just be the funding of that position, how we're going to pay for it out of our city coffers.
And then the second question regarding reserve officers, and Kate, I haven't been able to wade through all this. Reserve officers don't necessarily fall under civil service rules?
That's correct.
Okay, okay, that's fine. And just how many reserve officers do you have supplementing your 21 full-time sworn?
Five,
okay.
And just also, you received an email from me this week inviting for one-on-one meetings. At your convenience, please come down, ask me whatever questions you would have, and again, looking forward to working with all of you.
Great. Thanks very much, Chief.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda, current hiring issues, vacant position, John Walters, public safety testing.
Just when I thought I was going to get a sit down.
Yeah.
So currently we're down two positions. And what I am looking for on this is lateral positions, meaning experienced police officers. There's two categories, basically, an entry level and a lateral. And Mr. Walters will do a better job explaining than I, but we go through a company called Public Safety Testing, which is Mr. Walters' company. And this is one used by numerous police agencies throughout the state. And what we're looking for now is, because of our current need of a lateral officer, meaning experience, somebody I don't have to pay to go through the police academy, that's what our current recruitment is going to be for and what we're going to talk to you about. But John's going to come up and give you an overview of his company and also how we get the list to you so that we make decisions about who we hire. John.
Good afternoon. My name is John Walters, and I represent Public Safety Testing. I have a few connections, a little bit about my background. I have a few connections with Bainbridge Island myself. My great-grandparents moved here in 1898, and I grew up here and graduated from Bainbridge High School in the 70s, and, oh my God, I even hate to admit this, 32 years ago, I was a Winslow police officer. Then I went on to be a police officer somewhere else, and for 7 years I was a police chief somewhere else, and then I ran a program for the United States Department of Justice for 3 years, and then I said, the heck with this, I'm gonna start my own business, and that's what I did about 12 years ago. Public Safety Testing was really formed to assist civil service commissions just like yours to help you hire good quality police officers or firefighters, corrections officers or dispatchers. And so what I'm going to do is just briefly go over what we do, how we do it, and how we can work together and how we can best serve you. So you see this on your screen, correct? All right, excellent. Basically, our goals at PST is ease the burden for the agencies, ease the burden for civil service commissions, and reduce many of the overlapping efforts that occur in government. When I got into this business 30-some years ago and was interested in, whether I was interested in Winslow PD or Renton PD or wherever, I had to apply at each of those agencies. I had to go test with each of those agencies. And up until about 10, 12 years ago, you had to do that around here as well. And so what we want to do is reduce some of those overlapping efforts amongst government agencies, eliminate some of the roadblocks to be an applicant. This generation of candidates is very different than the generation when John and I and others got in this business. And anything you can do to make it easier for them to get hired will help you in your recruiting efforts. We wanted to test more often. So many departments prior to PST were testing basically once a year, maybe twice a year. And then we wanted to increase the number of testing opportunities for police and fire departments, as well as take the test to the applicant versus having the applicant come to you. Throw out a wider recruiting net for you, enhance your applicant pool, enhance the quality and diversity of your applicant pool, and ultimately save your citizens and your taxpayers money, and make it user-friendly as possible for your applicants to go through. Basically, we work with about 170, 180 departments in the Pacific Northwest where we do all of their recruiting assistance, written testing, physical ability testing, and for many of those departments, we do background investigations, polygraph exams, psychological evaluations, and many of the pre-employment testing services that fall under that. We also work with Boeing and help them hire armed security officers, and we work with departments in Washington, Alaska, and Idaho right now. So what are some of the things we do for you? We help with recruiting and advertising, and we view recruiting and advertising as a partnership with you, and that's very, very important because for this to be most successful, we have to work together to get you good quality candidates. The biggest mistake that departments can make is to sign an agreement with us and then just say, hey, they're going to do all the work. It works best when we work together. So we do a lot of advertising. Advertising for everything from the Bainbridge Review to the Seattle Times and everywhere else in between. But in reality, today's applicants are searching for jobs on the web. And we track where we get our applicants, and it, like I said, they're searching on the web. So the best thing in terms of, one of the best things you can do, and you have done, is have a link to our site from your employment site. And as you search the Bainbridge website, you'll see where that's done. We work with all the colleges in the Pacific Northwest and their career centers in getting the word out about being a police officer, a firefighter, or a 911 dispatcher as well. These recruiting cards, and I have some packets for you, and I'll hand those out. But we have recruiting cards, and basically it's a business ID card that says, hey, you're interested in being a police officer here, go to this website, come and take a test, and once your test scores once you pass the test, then we send your scores to the city of Bainbridge Island, and then they will process you further. And so that, in essence, replaces the entire application packets that have traditionally been used in the hiring process. We help with recruiting posters. So this is an example of a poster we've done for Kent and Olympia, and we have a number of other posters, cities and departments that we work with. And folks have found that very helpful to post in their community, trying to attract applicants in their community. So in addition to recruiting assistance, become a one-stop shop. We provide information on our website about your city and your department so applicants can learn about it. We handle the initial application, the initial applicant processing, as well as the inquiries your applicants may have. Applicants self-screen based on your minimum requirements. So while there is a state law that covers basic minimum requirements to be a police officer in the state of Washington, most cities, most counties and their civil service commissions have adopted other standards, as you probably have as well. And so applicants self-screen based on your requirements. We can accommodate any requirement that you have. I've done a lot of research on what happens when you have too many requirements, and we can talk about that. But applicants self-screen for those. We administer the written exam for you. And we administer the physical ability test for you as well. And then following each test, we send you the certified scores and the applicant information following each test. So this test is done all year round. For example, this past Saturday, we were in Bremerton doing a test. And so if you haven't received them yet, you will tomorrow. Did you get them today? You'll get them tomorrow. So folks that tested in Bremerton, and in University Place in Pierce County on Sunday, you'll get those scores probably tomorrow. It looks like another 15 are coming or so. And I know that'll be helpful given where you're at. We also do EEO reporting for you. And what that is we let you know the gender and ethnicity of every applicant, every person that doesn't show, every person that fails the written, fails the physical ability test, and then everyone that is successful in your process. We also provide a listserv forum, so if you have any interest at all in joining a bulletin board or a listserv about some of these issues, Kate will have a way to help you do that. If any candidate changes their address or phone numbers or contact information, we update the civil service examiner. We also provide a personal history statement service. In a nutshell, what that is it's a 28-page document. And it asks everything about a candidate that can legally be asked at this stage of the hiring process. Everywhere they've lived, everywhere they've worked, insurance information, financial information, every drug they've ever tried, whether they've been caught or not, every crime they've ever been committed, whether they've been caught or not. And basically, we collect all of that data from your applicants. And many civil service commissions use that either before or after the interview process. What we're finding out, there's a new trend, and what we're finding out and what I highly suggest is that you consider using it before the oral board. And the reason you do that is that you can look at this document and you can say, you know what, this person could come into our interview, they could score 100% on the interview, and even if they did score 100%, we will never hire them based on self-admissions or whatever is in their personal history statement. And so that document's available to you. It's available about a week after each test. We ask the candidates to complete that. Many commissions are finding that very helpful for them. We will appear, if you ever have an appeal process that someone challenges the either the legality or the validity or anything of the process, we will appear at any hearing, at any time, at no cost. Just because I'm from Bainbridge, I don't want you to be the first, because in 10 years and thousands of applicants, we've never had an appeal where we've had to appear. But we will do it if you ever need it done. The advantages to applicants of going through PST and you working with us, they apply for your job online. They can take one test and apply to multiple agencies. When I got in this business and maybe went down in Austin, if you were interested in Austin or Dallas or Houston or many of the other cities I can name in Texas, you have to go there, you have to apply there, you have to take their written test, you have to take their physical ability test. With PST, you fill out one application, you take one written test, you take one physical ability test. Now, those of you that have taken the bar say, well, that makes sense. Well, for 100 years, we've never did that in police work or firefighting. We made them repeat the same process everywhere they went. And so now they can take one test that apply to multiple departments. It's convenient, it's flexible. We provide them with study guides. We give them information on how to prepare for the physical ability test. We do workshops for candidates and help them through the process. We charge them a testing fee, but even with the testing fee, we save them a ton of money because they only do it once instead of multiple times. And we offer them a flexible testing schedule. As I said, this past weekend we were in Bremerton, we're in near Tacoma. We test in Boise, we test in Juneau, Alaska, we test in Eastern Washington. Last year we offered 46 opportunities where folks could take a law enforcement exam to be a police officer for the city of Bainbridge Island. And some of our testing locations around the Pacific Northwest, everywhere, each month we hold tests somewhere around the Northwest. The integrity of the testing process is critical for us as it is for you. And we only use valid, reputable examinations. Many times I get asked the question, did you write these in your garage? No, we didn't write them. We searched the country for some of the best exams out there. And so that's what we've done. They exceed industry standards in terms of validity and defensibility. All of our folks are trained and experienced. I have a staff that is very experienced in this. Some of them have been in the civil service. I have one gal that works for me. She was a civil service examiner for 24 years. All of our proctors are trained, and yes, we train them how to count push-ups, how to count sit-ups. They're unbiased. If they know a candidate, they have to recuse themselves from testing with that candidate. If one of your applicants fails the written test, they're allowed to test again, but they must wait 3 months. And then we help them with study material if they're at all interested in coming back to test. If they fail the physical ability test, they have one retest opportunity within a three-month period. And they cannot apply to your department more than once every 6 months. If you hire a candidate and report it to us, as we ask you to do, then their name comes off every other list they're on. So let's say, for example, they've also applied to Port Orchard or Port Townsend or any of the other departments we might work with. If you hire them, their name comes off every other list they're on and vice versa. The written exam we use was developed by a firm outside of Chicago. It was validated on a criminal justice population, and while that seems like a given, there's actually police tests out there that weren't validated on law enforcement applicants. They're job-related, they're legally defensible, no evidence of adverse impact, high levels of content and criterion validity, and it complies with all local testing regulations. And we have also done a transportability validation, which validates the use of the exam based on the job task analysis done by the State Criminal Justice Training Commission, which sets the standards for police officers and corrections officers in the state of Washington. So it's never been, this exam has never been successfully challenged, not only in the Northwest, it's never been successfully challenged anywhere in the nation. So you can feel real good about it. It measures problem solving, reading comprehension, interpersonal ability, their ability to get along in a team environment, as well as ethics and integrity and assertiveness. The physical ability test that we administer is required by the state of Washington as an entrance exam to the Law Enforcement Academy, and so we administer the same exam as they are required by the state. And if those standards change, then we will change as well for you. So we count the push-ups, the runs, the sit-ups. We report that back to you. Each year we have an annual business meeting. Kate was at that in Ellensburg this year. Every year we ask our client agencies, you know, what do you like most about what we do for you? Knock on wood, every year the results have been the same. It saves staff time. This process saves money. We get a larger applicant pool. We get better qualified applicants, enhanced diversity. Departments as well as applicants like the continuous testing aspect of it. Recruiting net is wider. It's very appealing to today's applicants. And what limited resources departments have, especially today, it lets them refocus those on recruiting, the oral board process, and background investigations. It's actually getting closer to 1,500 now, but 1,500 law enforcement officers and about 600 firefighters have been hired through our system. And in addition to the pre-employment testing piece, like I said, we also do background investigations, polygraph exams. I have psychologists in our office that do psychological evaluations. We do promotional exams, we do assessment centers. We just got through doing promotional testing for the Kitsap County Sheriff's Office, their sergeant process as well as their lieutenant process, and as well as recruiting posters. I want to be very respectful to Linda's time. I know she wants to get out of here on time. I don't even know how long this meeting's supposed to go, so I'm going to stop right there. And if you have any desire to run through the process as an applicant, I can show you that, or you can do it on your free time. But I will tell you, in the next couple of months, we're going through a whole new website redesign, upgrade. It's one that we've been working on for over a year now, and it's going to be pretty cool. It's going to be great for the applicants, and it's going to be great for Kate as the examiner. She'll be able to access a bunch of this stuff right online. So may I answer any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Walters. And it may be a question for you or also Kate and Chief Feldman. Just curious on, and you may touch us on this, on the civil service rules, as far as how we establish our eligibility list rankings. Is it just based on those two scores, the physical agility and the written exam, or do you also factor in preference for military or college or language skills or certain things? How is our eligibility list currently ranked?
We send you raw test scores, and you get a written test score and the fact they passed the physical ability test. Basically, there was a federal court ruling that you can only report pass or fail on the physical ability test, okay? So we send raw test scores to the client, to Kate. She factors in any veterans preference points, as well as my understanding of your rules, and you should probably take this over, but my understanding of your rules, you also wait an oral board process, and then there's a weighting of oral board, weighting of the written test. That That weighted score is then constitutes your eligibility list, which they certify.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Okay. That's about how 98% of cities do it.
Okay, and then just one follow-up question regarding lateral officer hires. I know in some departments, the physical agility is not necessarily a requirement if you're a lateral. Currently hired an active duty law enforcement officer, how is ours currently structured as far as requiring a physical agility for lateral officers?
We do not currently require the physical ability test for laterals. And that is something that I believe was decided last year with the commission, but certainly can be discussed at some point. I don't know, John, do you have any comment on
Yeah, Mr. Killian, I can tell you that a number of cities don't require it, and a number do. And so it's really up to the agency.
Okay. And currently, are you just providing the written and the physical agility? Are you doing any psychologicals for us or other screenings, polygraphs or anything else for us, or just those two right now?
Just those two. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I believe the chief may want us to be involved in a background investigation in the future, but.
Rob, great. Thank you. Good questions. Any other questions for Mr. Walters? I guess, yeah, Steve, sorry.
Thank you. I was impressed with your presentation and the extent of work that you do for public agencies. How large are your staff?
Depends on the day.
How much?
Depends on the day. And I say that because I have a significant number of seasonal and part-time folks that help us out on during test day. And so at the office, we have about four folks working there. But then on top of that, we have about a dozen retired police officers that do background investigations. And then we have some psychologists and polygraph examiners. And then we have test proctors that number about 40 or 50 that depend on the day that we're testing. And then we also have a big warehouse in Kent where we do firefighter testing.
So, and does your jurisdiction go beyond the state of Washington?
We have some clients in Idaho and Alaska, yes.
And does it include Oregon and California?
Not yet. We've only got 47 more states to go.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah. I have just one follow-up.
Go ahead, Rob.
Just do you test out of state at all, as far as not having centers, but for applicants, officers that are coming from California
Great
or out
question.
Of Washington and aren't able to come to here locally to test?
Great question. Yes, if you want us to. And the reason I say that is because we can't, if we have the ability to do that, yes. But I'll tell you, this process is very appealing to out-of-state applicants because they can come in and fly in and take one test and apply to many departments. It's not uncommon for our test site. For example, I always get to greet the out-of-state people that come, especially. And on Sunday, we had folks from Florida, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Colorado, and many other states. And because, like I said, they can fly in and take one test. Now, with some departments that we work with, they said, we want you to test some folks in other states, but we can't do the physical ability tests, obviously, nor can I defend it if we're not there doing it. So that department has made a decision that they'll administer the physical ability test when the candidate gets here for further parts of their process. We have an arrangement with colleges in all 50 states where we can get them our test, or they can do it online, and then a candidate goes into the college to take the written test. And so the answer is yes, but there's a hitch about the physical ability test, but this process is also attractive for out-of-state folks to fly in.
And then just one more. As far as law enforcement officers coming from another state, is there any issue with officers that are certified in California transferring their license under Washington's law? Great, thanks.
Okay, any other questions from commission members? I had just a couple of quick ones. This is all fascinating and brand new to me, so thank you for coming by and explaining that to the neophytes here. I'm curious, what percentage, shall we say, of the potential customers are you servicing out there? How extensive is your organization that way?
In Washington, we work with about 102 law enforcement departments, and there's about, 300?
Okay, so that's a significant chunk of the market there.
Yeah.
And how long have you been in business, and how long have you been serving this role for Bainbridge?
I started this in the year 2000. And Bainbridge, I'm not sure. I can look it up real quick, but Bainbridge has been a long-term client.
So it's been a long time.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay. And are there lots of other departments out there who do this stuff themselves, or are there other companies that do this work that
There's
you do?
There's one other company that works with about 4 or 5 departments in the state, and then everybody else does it themselves.
Okay.
My biggest salespeople are the folks that have to count the push-ups doing it themselves.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. And so if I understood this, in addition to the written test and the physical test, these other items are sort of a menu of things that your clients can either take advantage of or not, depending on how they want to go based on their own local standards.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you'll at some point be explaining to us what it is we do on top of those things. And
yes, I think probably after this meeting at some point we can go through the whole step-by-step application process.
Okay. And I don't know, you had some sort of demo, obviously an online experience or something. I don't know if you want to try to translate that, Kate, for us to do outside of meeting time,
mm-hmm.
if anybody's interested.
Yeah.
We could, if there's any materials that you want to show us, Kate will flip it up to us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And it's significant. It's going to change dramatically here in about 6 weeks or 8 weeks. So
maybe we should wait.
It's up to you. But I'll tell you, if you go to our website now, you're more than welcome to go through the entire process, and then when you get to the end, just choose I'll pay you by check option, and then never send us a check, and then we don't ever bother you.
It doesn't destroy our credit rating, I assume.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Do you have any further questions from commissioners? Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity.
So, Commissioner Weiland, I'll just quickly mention, as Mr. Walter said, we don't have a time set for this meeting. You know, we had a start time, but really we're just going to see how far we go. But I don't know if anybody has any constraints or any concerns about when the meeting should finish. I just thought I would ask that. Thank you. No, that's okay. I will.
At 5:45.
Okay.
Is when I need to be.
Okay.
That should be just fine in terms of what I think we have planned, so for our part.
And thank you for asking.
Let's try to keep an eye on that, and we'll move forward. So next on the agenda is a civil service rules review.
So I'll just quickly introduce as our interim city attorney, Will Patton. And we have put together for you, you've seen a binder of all sorts of fascinating materials. And at some point in future meetings, I assume we'll touch on many of these, but for now, we wanted to provide you with a brief overview of the rules as they stand right now. So that's what Will's here for.
And today I'm just going to give you a broad overview of the origin of civil service commissions and how the rules relate to the statute that provides for civil service commissions. And in future meetings, we should go through the rules in detail, but not today, because we're just overloading you with information. I'm also, in a future meeting, going to give you some presentations. I know some of you are very familiar with this, with the Open Public Meetings Act and the Public Records Act, because it affects every body of the city of Bainbridge Island and other cities, and it's an important issue to be cognizant of, particularly as it resulted in that one of those issues resulted in the creation of this 5-member commission. So civil service grew up in the 30s in the state of Washington because of the history of police departments, of nepotism and closed organizations where only favorites were promoted. And so there was a wide movement to create a regularized civil service commission so that regular rules would be applied and people would be hired and promoted on a fair basis as between people. The state of Washington passed in 1937 a statute, which you find at the back here, 4112, which applies to cities in the state of Washington, which requires a civil service commission for police departments in cities of Washington. And it sets out a very detailed criterion and provisions for civil service commissions, but it also provides that cities can supplant this statute with their own rules if they so choose. And almost all cities in Washington have done that, have chosen to adopt their own rules, so that when people look at the statute, they say, well, wait a minute, it says in 4112 that you're supposed to do this and that. And if the city had not adopted its separate provisions in a code, in the city code, then it would have to follow those rules. But if the city changes the rules, then it doesn't have to follow exactly the statute that's provided here, although it has to do the same things. An interesting example affecting, just to illustrate this point, there's one of you here that couldn't be on the commission, Mr. Killian, if you had to follow the statute. That is because the statute provides in 4120.030 that a commissioner has to be a three-year resident of the community in which he or she is serving on the commission. Bainbridge Island City Council this fall changed that in the code to provide for a greater expanse of eligibility for the new Civil Service Commission by changing the rule and not requiring a three-year residency requirement. So it's that kind of thing that the city can change as long as you adhere to the basic provisions of the Civil Service Commission. And those basic things, as you'll see in the rules, and as you've just heard, are supervising the recruitment and hiring process, that is providing the hiring authority, which in this case is the chief of police, with at least three candidates from whom he or she can choose that have been certified as eligible by the Civil Service Commission. And then the second large increment of work for a Civil Service Commission is hearing appeals from disciplinary events that have occurred within the police department. And here there's an interesting phenomenon in Washington where there are unions here that organize police officers called the Police Guild. They're not national unions, but they're localized unions for each of the individual jurisdictions. And they have their own union contract with the city. And police officers facing a disciplinary event can choose either to follow the union rules or to come to the Civil Service Commission. So, and if they choose the union rules, then they can sometimes bypass the Civil Service Commission. So it's a choice. It's an interesting phenomenon in Washington, but you will face that. The third body of work that commissions in the state of Washington generally spend a lot of time on are retirement issues, like disability, people who have in their union contracts are what's called LEF-1 provisions in the state of Washington, which is the law enforcement, firefighters, retirement system have certain obligations on the employer that are different from other retirement systems, and that sometimes becomes a body of work for the Civil Service Commission. So you will, and that's about the overview I'm going to give you on this at the moment. So the first thing, of course, that the chief is most concerned about is recruitment and establishing a list, because there's only one person on the list at the moment, and really there should always be three on the list for the chief to be able to select among qualified candidates to do that. So at the moment, there is no disciplinary proceeding that's pending before the Civil Service Commission, so that's happily a happy circumstance for you that you don't have to jump right into that. But when you do have a disciplinary proceeding, an appeal of a discipline, then you become a quasi-judicial body, that is, you're sitting like a court, hearing evidence and then going into your own deliberations, and there is a state law that, and a provision in the Bainbridge Code that restricts that deliberation to you, to me, the city attorney, and to the secretary chief examiner, the only people who can be in the room when you're just discussing that. So that's part of what the Open Public Meetings Act issues that we'll talk about when we get when I get to give you that presentation. So the one issue, however, that arises right away is the fact that we are here at a special meeting, which is a noticed meeting, which you can do at any time to have a special meeting, but the bodies like this also have regular meetings, and the regular meeting under the current rules of the Civil Service Commission is the second Friday of every month at 3 o'clock, and that means this coming Friday at 3 o'clock. So you may want to decide that you don't have any pending business at that meeting, but set another special meeting where we can do some more introduction, and then decide at that meeting whether you want to change that time of the regular meeting for each month, but you really do need to set a regular meeting time so that people can depend on it. Another one of the issues that that served to create this five-member commission instead of a three-member commission was, what does the Open Public Meetings Act mean? How much notice is required? To whom the notice is given? And I'll cover that in the future presentation about that and talk about the history of the Civil Service Commission, which I'm sure Mr. Killian knows more thoroughly than I. But we can talk about that and how important it is to adhere to these provisions of setting either a special meeting and also establishing a regular meeting so people in the community who want to come to these meetings, if they do, know that you'll be meeting at that time, unless you cancel it. So this one thing you should probably consider before leaving today is whether you want to have the regular meeting on Friday at 3 o'clock or whether you want to change that to another special meeting or wait till February meeting to meet again. But that really is up to you.
Okay.
So if you have any questions, I'm happy to try and answer them now.
Before we talk about the meeting schedule, right, which might be a good time to do it right now, but let's see if there's any questions for Will, right, Will?
Yes.
I have a question. Clarification on appeal rights. As I heard, the police officer would have the right to appeal through their collective bargaining agreement.
Yes.
Or to the Civil Service Commission, but right, not both.
Right.
And I assume they make that selection in writing when they do file the appeal, and when they do,
I'm not sure writing is actually required to go through the union proceedings, but
But it seemed to me they would file a grievance if it's through the collective bargaining agreement on the discipline, and if they do that, I assume they've waived any right to appear before our commission.
Yes,
and if they take that appeal, and I assume they take that to arbitration, they are bound by the arbiter's decision being binding on the employee and the city. And what if they appeal to the Civil Service Commission, and the Civil Service Commission makes a decision? Are they bound by that decision, or do they have the right to go to court to review that decision, and does the city have the right to go to court to review that decision?
It's binding on both, but to say that no one has a right to go to a court is not really
right, yeah,
the final word, because people still always have a right to say that the Civil Service Commission acted unfairly, arbitrarily, capriciously, and and therefore try to appeal. Except
that under the law, the arbitrator's the appeal and arbitrator's decision is very narrow.
True,
and,
but
and the question is this is the same restriction on the Civil Service Commission decision?
Yes.
As far as a review of the court.
Yes. Okay. But again, it's hard to say that no one, that you really can't go to court. You can, but it's difficult to prevail if you've gone through the full extent of one of these procedures, unless you can really show that there was some bias or arbitrary and capricious action.
If I understand your question, to just clarify my own mind, what you're asking, and I think you're confirming, is that when someone does go through the disciplinary proceeding and they appeal to this body, this is the last designated stage of appeal. There is no presumed right to appeal to a higher body. Now, someone can always sue for violation of civil rights and a variety of other things, but there's no set expected higher level of appeal than us. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
I was saying one other thing, is if they appeal under the collective bargaining agreement, through the grievance procedure, there's no appeal to the Civil Service Commission.
Right. No two bites at the apple.
Yeah, right.
That's
yes. And that's correct too.
That's correct.
Okay. So they start their appeal either one place or the other, and that's their only avenue, one or the other.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Good. Further questions, Steve?
No, I don't.
Good question. Any other comments?
I have just one.
Rob.
Follow-up. One quick follow-up, and maybe something you can address in one of your future presentations to us. That just a further discussion of the effect of the Seattle Police Guild versus City of Seattle, and if any of that case law, or for that matter, any other case law, do we need to change any of our rules or operating rules by any of those, anything that happened in that case or any other cases that we're not in compliance on how our rules are currently operating or written?
Really not from the Seattle Police Guild case. That relates to whether you can have the secretary, chief examiner, as an in-house employee and move that function by the city council to an in-house employee, which the city council has done just recently. And the Seattle Police Guild case endorsed that change where the personnel department in the city of Seattle was acting as the ministerial functions for the Civil Service Commission, but they can't take over the prerogatives of the commission to make decisions. That is, they can't move the standards for creating the list of eligible applicants into the human resources department of the city of Seattle, but they can move the personnel functions, the record keeping, those sorts of things.
Okay.
There are a number of rules that you will need to look at and probably change because the rules are based on a three-member commission. So, for example, if two commissioners vote, then it passes, and of course that wouldn't make sense with a five-member board. So there's those kinds of changes that undoubtedly need to be reviewed and changed. But it's not a very good idea for me to give you a whole list of things to do in the second meeting, and you don't know. Because you haven't had any familiarity with each other or with this whole process, and it doesn't make sense to do that because that would be taking away your prerogatives and for establishing those rules.
Sure. I just wanted to start the dialogue, and as future meetings come up, what we need to start thinking about as far as our changes go and things that we need to affect and getting feedback from you of whether our current rules are in compliance or not.
In setting up this commission as a new five-member commission, of course, the issue of the secretary chief examiner was prominent in doing that, and I gave that opinion to the city council that the Seattle Police Guild decision doesn't prevent what the city council did, that is, setting up Kate as or another person in the city to keep the records, to organize issues for the Civil Service Commission, but not take away your prerogatives.
Okay. Obviously, given the fact that we're all brand new on this, we obviously have a steep learning curve, and so I think we're going to be sort of folding back the layers of this onion a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
But let me ask just a couple of quick structural questions if you could. I'm a little unsure as a relationship between this commission and the city per se. I understand that Kate, who's a city employee, is serving in the role as secretary, which is defined in the statute. If we as a commission have a legal question, are you our attorney?
Yes.
Okay, so that's directly applied for. If we have a practical request for some papers to be copied, is the city available for our use?
Yes.
Of sorts?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, great. That clarifies. Thank you.
Yeah.
So presumably your conversations with us would be privileged if we ever got into that setting of appropriate private conversation, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. I'm looking forward to obviously a lot more education from you because there's a lot of things, at least personally, I don't know about all this stuff, and we'll have to unfold it as we go.
Right.
But thank you.
Rather than trying to do all that today, I think it's much better to do it in
bite-sized chunks.
Yes.
I understand that, and I appreciate that. So
okay.
we'll have you back, obviously.
Right. Thank you.
Kate, maybe it's an appropriate time to just stop for a second and talk about scheduling of meetings because it ties in directly with, you know, how fast we want to gobble up these things that we've got to learn. And I personally don't have a gut sense as that, so I don't have an opinion. Maybe we should be meeting more than once a month for a little while until we feel we've gotten our sea legs, but I open that up to your recommendation and then a discussion, perhaps?
My only comment would be based on the need I see in the department. There is a real need to fill these vacancies, so you know, there's definitely work that needs to be done right away, but really it's up to you to determine, you know, how much time you have available to talk about that. I mean, ideally, I think it would be nice to have another meeting in the next few weeks, I would say the next 3 weeks maybe, where we could get a little bit more in depth into the process for hiring laterals and entry levels, even though, as the chief said, at the moment we are really considering laterals. So you could have a little bit more information about that because we really do need to create an eligibility list fairly soon.
Well, I mean, I have no problem, I mean, given the fact that we have a steeper workload at the beginning, mm-hmm. meeting in 2 weeks from now just so we can begin to get going on this. But I want to hear from each of you
if that's... 2 weeks would be fine with me.
Yeah, I agree as well. I think we should ramp it up quickly in the beginning.
I don't have a problem with meeting in 2 weeks, but I'm not sure meeting in 2 weeks fits with the work that needs to be done. That is to say, if the needs of the department aren't ripe enough for when we need to step in and approve some list or something like that.
Yeah, I really think
then maybe 2 weeks is too soon.
I think there's two things that are sort of on our agenda. One is just our own education.
Yeah.
We could probably have another three meetings just to educate ourselves, and then there's the needs of the real world out there in the chief's life.
Mm-hmm.
And Kate, maybe you can guide us as to what the next agenda should look like and how quickly it should come forward. But you're hearing openness to hit the ground running.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, please weigh in. It seems like it'd be a little bit of both if we could. As Mr. Walter said, you know, he thought there might have been 15 people that took the test over the weekend. Our next step, really, without getting too detailed, is we need to schedule some oral boards. So I would look for guidance from the commission on setting that up. That would be, I think, the most obvious practical work, like you said, real world stuff. And then we could spend some more time also going through the role of the commission, the rules. I don't know, anything else that I'm missing in terms of short term?
No, the next step would obviously be for us to get the list from PST and look at however many bodies, it sounds like we have a decent number on it, then we want to try and go to the next step of getting oral boards and giving you a good list where you look at it and certify the list for us.
So the next step is this oral boards, but that's only going to apply to a certain recommended list,
right,
of applicants?
You're not going to get bombarded with a list of,
right,
50, 60 names. You're going to get a very workable list. We have from the written, it's 85%?
I think it's 80.
80.
Mm-hmm.
So we have set a standard that we're not taking any written score below 80%. And we try and round up, but again, we find that helps narrow us down real quick as far as, you know, where the writing skills are and everything. So then anybody above 80, and we try and interview in a workable group.
Do you need input from this body on what the oral boards look like or anything like that?
It's possible. I think that would be useful to have recommendations for panelists. We could talk about the questions. I'm not sure how much that was done in the past, but it just seems like it would be appropriate to have your input, especially since this is the first process. The real timing issue, and I'm not sure if Mr. Walters talked about this, but in my conversations with him recently, is lateral applicants are few and far between, and they are less patient because they're more desirable as applicants. So if we have people who have applied, then we need to try to sort of snatch them up as quickly as we can. That's another reason why sort of the timing is an issue. So if we could have oral boards in, you know, a month from now, that would be ideal. So in order to make that happen, I really think it would be helpful to work with you to put together, you know, a panel and also a set of questions.
Okay, so bottom line, and I'm trying to get my head around this.
Yeah.
Do you guys have a recommendation or a request as to when you'd like us to meet next to fit most effectively into the meeting your needs? Whenever we meet, we can always do some more educating of ourselves, but you tell me what you want. If you say you've got an emergency need that needs us to meet quickly, that's great. If you say you're not ready for us until 3 or 4 weeks from now, that's fine too. You tell us.
I mean, I would say by the end of the month would be great.
We talked about 2 weeks, you know, but in the month, fine. We'll have whatever material. We'll get everything we can together for you and present it to you at that time. So we're
there's a holiday in there, you know, so I'm trying to look at the calendar.
So 2 weeks isn't too soon for you?
No.
And 3 weeks isn't too late?
No.
So we've got some.
We have some room there. I mean, I'm just sensitive to not bombarding you too much, so.
No. I think we're all doing fine. Steve?
A question for Kate, and listen to the city attorney. I thought we were supposed to have a meeting this Friday under the current rules, and do we need to take action to cancel that meeting since this is a special meeting, and then make a decision on when the next meeting, and I assume this again going to be a special meeting until we amend our rules.
Yes, you do need to make that decision and set a special meeting if it's not this regular meeting on Friday.
Okay. Well, we can pull out our calendars now and just figure that out. And if it's something between 2 and 3 weeks is what I'm hearing. And
how about if we do 3 o'clock, not on this Friday, but in 2 weeks Friday?
The 27th, or I'm sorry, the 20th.
20th. I'd like the 3 o'clock Friday time.
27th?
20th.
A week from this Friday, Linda, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Give us enough time.
One question I had,
less than 2 weeks, but.
No, I think you said two and a half weeks, right, Linda? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, it's, I just kind of like that Friday time, 3 o'clock, and so whatever works for everybody.
I think the 27th would be good for us if that works for you. My question really for the group is in terms of schedules, you know, and work schedules, whatever, is there, you know, is 3 o'clock too early for some people or is that manageable?
I'd prefer the 4 o'clock like today because then I can get on the 3 o'clock ferry and
kind of
get here.
I personally prefer 4 as well. I mean, I'm close, but I, you know, do work on the Friday afternoon. So is that going to work with you, Linda, 4 o'clock?
Sure, 4 o'clock.
Steve, okay. Rob?
Yeah, 4 o'clock. Sorry.
All right. So presumably we need a motion to, one, cancel the meeting that's scheduled for the rule by the rules for next Friday, and two, propose a special meeting for 4 o'clock on the 27th of January. Does anybody want to make that motion?
So moved.
Second it.
Okay. I'll call that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so we're a go on that.
Great.
With regard to the agenda in that meeting, I don't want to jump ahead because we got some more things to do as well. But are you going to construct that for us at this point? I mean, we're going to start having ideas presumably as time goes on.
Yes.
But I think we're all pretty well open books right now, or
right.
Empty glasses, shall we say?
Okay. So, and I was envisioning that I would work with the chair on that. I would certainly ask anybody for agenda items and then work with the chair on developing the final agenda. if you have any ideas,
okay,
let me know.
That work for everybody? And we can. Oh, these are all new procedures. We're going to be finding our way as we go here. Could I ask one more question of Will before we move on to the last issue? Just trying to get a concept in my mind of the volume of stuff that this committee typically does. How many positions are filled in a typical year, and how many disciplinary matters come to this body in a typical year, if there's such a thing?
I don't know if there's such thing as typical.
Yeah.
Question, though. Well, because we want to try and establish a ladder list that is constantly being refreshed, you will have that coming through on a fairly regular basis. I would rather not get in the boat we're in right now where the list has been exhausted down to about one body, because that doesn't give anybody a good group to test for to do a chief's interview. So that would be continually, but once, again, I think once you finish your stride, you're going to see that, okay, I've got a list, we've got these scores, we know where these folks, how they score. Next step is our interview process, here's our list of questions. Questions look good, proceed. So I would say it's consistent, but it's not, we don't get usually bombarded. There will be things that will come up, because it's just like, somebody asks, what's a police officer's typical day like?
Yeah.
No such thing. So, with the commission meeting, what's a typical commission meeting like? Well, you like to say it's just this, but it can be so much more if issues arise.
But in terms of formal complaints or disciplinary appeals, how many of those do you typically have?
You come into the process when it is anything that is any type of discipline, demotion, suspension, termination, something like that.
If there's an appeal.
Yeah, if there's an appeal. And right now, there's nothing on the horizon. There's nothing going on right now as far as anything that would come to the commission.
Okay, all right.
I would just add that since I've been working in human resources, there have not been any appeals, I don't believe, that have been heard by the commission. And I believe in the last 3 years, there have been four positions that have been filled, so four recruitments. I could be off by one or two, but.
Yeah, and when we're talking about that, so that would be.
Okay, thank you. That just gives me the broad parameters. I appreciate that.
There have been, of course, disciplinary issues, but almost all of them have gone through the collective bargaining process.
Right.
Got it. Yeah. Well, they're going to love us so much, they're just going to come right here, I'm sure. So. Okay, let's move on, see how much we can get done here. We wanted to have a brief discussion about inter-meeting communication, which I know is just a barest introduction to the Open Meetings Act. Kate, were you going to talk about that, or Will, or?
Well, that's really a topic for the overview of the Open Public Meetings Act, but it's important that this is a natural thing for people to do in a technological age. The law is not written for a technological age, is to send email to everybody. But when you send emails to the entire group, you have actually created a meeting under the Open Public Meetings Act. In fact, the city of Bellingham was just cited by the auditor for violating the Open Public Meetings Act because of email communications amongst, I think it was Whatcom County officials, but for sending emails to everybody and then responding to everybody. Because the Open Public Meetings Act describes discussion as an action, it becomes something that you have to do in an open public meeting unless there's some exemption for that kind of discussion. So it's the really the biggest caution is not to send one another emails to the whole group. You can send an email to one other person, but that also becomes an issue when people start forwarding that email to other people. Then it becomes a collective discussion disguised as an individual email. So the best thing is really to either have a personal discussion with one other person so as not to make a quorum of this five-member body, or to hold the substantive discussions really for these open meetings. So that's the issue. So we can communicate with you from the city and say, here's the proposed agenda. So it's not you communicating amongst one another.
Let me offer, and tell me if I'm wrong, Will, but from my experience, you can't, if you send out an email to us that says, here's my proposed agenda items, here's my proposed meeting times, we are allowed to respond on scheduling issues,
yes,
as long as we don't address the substance of the topics.
Right.
So you can reply to all saying, yeah, I'm available Tuesday, and yes, I think these are good topics, or how about this is a different topic. But the concept is substantive deliberation cannot go on anyplace else other than in open meeting. Of course, two people can meet and talk about anything they want as long as it's not a phone tree, shall we say, okay? That's considered also subverting the concept. And I, in my experience dealing on elected boards, it's really useful to remember common sense. The concept is that the business of an elected or of an appointed board should happen in the public for the public to see. And if you think that if you're getting into something that's deliberative and you're doing it with more than one person on this board, then it's not right. I mean, we're subverting that concept. That we can all go out to dinner if we talk about our kids and social contacts, but we can't do the board's work outside of the board's public setting. So you just need to be a little careful about that. And if you have questions about communication protocol, ask Kate. I'm sure she'll be happy to help us out. Okay? Any questions now on this topic?
I just have some additional comments. This was also a standing agenda item that we had on the ethics board, and it usually comes up around the conflict of interest at the beginning of the meeting. And it was also an opportunity for us to make that transparent revelation of any contacts we had with anybody in the decision tree over that course of that month, whether it was the press called me, or Kate called me, or the prior secretary chief examiner, Ms. Hendrickson, called me, or one of the council members called me or sent me an email about some topic. And it was just to err on the side of caution and just to be as transparent as possible in what we've been doing and who we've been having discussions with of any matter that deals with what we do as a body. So it allowed us a chance for our chairman to say, oh yeah, I had a one-on-one with the mayor about topic XYZ, and this is what we discussed. So they were in a re-airing in a public setting of what that conversation was. And it proved very valuable for us to just, everybody was on the same page. The public that attended the meeting was in our minutes, and then everybody else on the board knew exactly what took place in that conversation. And in that air, I'm actually gonna pass out something because Ms. Hendrickson has my personal email address because of the work I did with her on the ethics board and then prior, and I still receive things from her, and I just want to share that with everybody so you see exactly what she sent to me. I don't endorse it, but it's my opportunity to share with you what she has sent to me. And it can be entered into the record as well. Take it, read it. Some of it is redundant with some of the information that is included in our package, but you can pick up what you will. So, yes. And it just became one of our standing agenda items and our ability to share that information as well.
Do other commission members, let me clarify, as I see it, what you're suggesting, Rob, actually goes beyond the Open Meetings Act. And it's going so far as to say, if you have a substantive conversation that's relevant to this board's role, even with a single person, you are suggesting that there be some kind of airing of that. Now, before I voice any personal opinions, how do people feel about that? I mean, we could give it a trial balloon, and we're not obligated to do that under law by any means, but it might, you're saying it's a good way to sort of keep your head above water, shall we say. I don't know how people feel about that.
I think, Bruce, we need to exercise some common sense, like you say. Like if I go home and have a conversation with my wife about how the meeting went, right, I don't have to fill everyone in on that, or even a neighbor says, you know, how's it going or something like that. But there's a point where someone's weighed in heavily and it may be maybe it's persuasive or maybe it's not, but it's a view that I've crunched on or considered. Maybe that's something that I should be sharing, you know?
Yes.
And it may be that whether I identify who exactly that was or not, maybe I'd be infringing on their privacy to some degree. So I think there's some common sense there.
I strongly agree that we have to use our own filters because, I mean, I get emails all the time from, you know, the usual cast of characters, and, you know, and God bless them exercising the First Amendment rights, but I sure as heck don't want to have to bring every one of those communications before this board if they mention the police department. So I agree with the concept of what you're saying, but I think we all have to exercise our own sense of judgment. Steve, did you have a comment, or Linda?
I just think you have to use some common sense to build this judgment.
Yeah.
I don't think we need a policy or
we'll figure it out as we go.
Yeah, well, let's try follow Rob's suggestion and we'll just see how it evolves. But okay, if everybody's ready, let's see. Next on the agenda was Catrol. Secretary's role and responsibilities. You want to talk to us about it?
So I don't have anything about this, but Commissioner Killian, do you want to speak on this one?
Yes. I don't know if I can cover it in 5 minutes, because I want to get this out of here, and it may be a topic of agenda that we can move forward. But just as a discussion point, having dealt with what the situation was with the Secretary, Chief Examiner, and the Civil Service Commission previously, and then how the City Council changed the ordinance, I actually think, Kate, you have the toughest job in this room right now because of all the different hats that you're being asked to wear. I would like to have an open discussion and get your input, because I don't. That's the one discussion in the public that I've never actually heard is your feelings, whether or not you feel comfortable in this position on being able, literally earlier today, answering to the city manager, but answering to us now and then to the city council tomorrow, and whether or not it's fair to you and you feel comfortable in that role, and that either real or hypothetically, you may be placed in positions that we're asking you to do things that are not necessarily in keeping with what the city manager, or the city council, or the chief may ask at any particular time. So I would just like to see how you're going to balance that, and if you are comfortable with that as well, and how we can help you to bridge those gaps amongst the city administration and the council and us.
Sure. I've been in contact with a lot of other cities' human resources personnel on various issues. And after I attended the conference in Ellensburg last year, I met a lot of other secretary chief examiners from other cities. And the majority of them are hold positions similar to mine or maybe slightly different, but within human resources. So I was able to, you know, have some conversations, and I didn't really get a sense that there were any issues with other cities doing it this way. I also had a conversation with our previous city attorney, Jack Johnson, and he gave me an analogy that just sort of sticks in my head, that that he works for the city manager, but he also works for the city council. And I feel like that's a pretty good comparison for me. So the city manager doesn't really have anything to do with my work with you. And it's not something that I see as an issue, because I just wouldn't, I just don't see, I mean, you're in charge, and you know, I report to you, and that's just how I envision it working. But you know, this is our first meeting, so we'll see.
Sure, and it's just something, I just want to ensure that you are not overburdened by wearing so many different hats, and that feel free to share with us that if you feel you're being pulled in multiple directions, or there are some conflicts that are arising in your roles with the city as an employee, and your role as the secretary chief examiner as well, please make sure that's a very open, wide street of information flowing this way.
I will do, and thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I just want to say I really appreciate Rob bringing this up. I'll happy other people comment on this as well, but I just wanted to say one thing about my attitude on this kind of subject. There's so much drama in this room, and I would hope that we're not going to participate in that drama. If there's any issues that any, whether it's in the police department leadership or the city attorney's office or Kate's office, we have to have transparency. And that means if there's any problems, if people don't like the way things are going, for God's sake, let's put it on the table and talk about it. I don't want to get into the patent place that a lot of city boards seem to get into. So I think if everyone's on the same page with that, we're gonna be a model, in my hope. Comments from anybody else? Questions?
I just want to comment. it seems to me that this commission is the independent body, not Kate or anyone else. It's this commission, and Kate will do what we ask her to do, and I don't think it should be an issue at all, from what I know of it. And that, as long as this commission is independent, I think we've and we stay that way, we've done our role. So.
Okay, good. I think we're all in agreement. Believe it or not, we are coming close to our designated ending time. We talked about future meetings. I guess I jumped ahead on the agenda on that, sorry. we do have a time here for public comment. I don't know if that's statutory obligation of us. I personally think it's always great to have a time for public comment at any public meeting. I don't know if you all agree or not. I like to see this as part of our meetings. There may be times when we feel it's appropriate to have it earlier in the meeting if we think that it somehow fits into the deliberation appropriately. But I personally am very interested in anyone who's willing to sit through this meeting having a chance to speak if they want to. So is there anyone here who'd like to make some public comment about any of the topics we've discussed so far? Or things not on the agenda that relate to our charge.
Everybody's just going to be happy to
meet. Okay. Kate.
I'll just quickly, sorry, I realized I should have done this sooner. I'm going to call out our human resources manager, Jennifer Longfield, so you all know that who she is. She's also our budget manager in the finance department. So.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the name?
Jennifer Longfield.
Okay, so. Great. Thank you for coming. All right. Does anybody have any other comments or questions before we move on? I think we've got our next meeting date, and you and I are going to get together at some point. And thank you all for coming, and we're gonna try to make this work smoothly. Okay?
Thank you.
Thanks very much. We're adjourned.